Hello everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated mafia-themed geek podcast. It is I, once again, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman. And yes, it's another retrospective episode, but let me explain a few things. The reason why I'm kind of doing these retrospective episodes still is because, one, most cons are not really out and about right now. They're still kind of closed for the remainder of 2020. There might be one or two still out and about later this year, like November, December. The way things go, I might miss the one that's in December, even though as much as I want to go to it, I need to get back to work and get income in so I could catch up with everything. But that's beside the point. And speaking of cons, there's a chance I might quote unquote get kidnapped by a couple of friends of mine to go to a rare actual show this kind of point in the year. It's a local convention. They're going to try to, quote unquote, kidnap me to take me to this event. So therefore, there might be episode content for all of you in regards to it. And plus, there might be YouTube content out there for this coming from this event as well. So we'll see how things go for the day. It is a one-day only event, and it's nothing new that we cannot handle in regards to it. It's just that we'll be mooching off a booth, and there's only so much room we can do in regards to it. But I digress. We're going to probably have some fun with it. But as you all saw from the show, the title, that this is not a four-state Comic-Con retrospective, but it's a four-state Slasher-Con retrospective. That's right. I've turned the knob of the Wayback Machine and went way back to the first, in essence, 6 months of our show. And no, the first official 4 months of our show. We haven't officially hit the 6 month mark in regards to this show. Because at this point, let me explain about Four State Slasher Con before we do anything in regards to it. Back in early 2015, I found out about Four State Slasher Con at the library's pop culture event at that time. And at this time, when the library was doing their pop culture event, this show was not even conceived yet. It was not even a twinkle in my eye, let alone anybody's eye at that point. So I met up with the folks in regards to it, and they were thinking originally of having Four State SlasherCon in the Martinsburg area. And I was enthused. I was literally excited about having a horror con in Martinsburg, any type of convention of sizable noteworthiness in Martinsburg. And things kind of happened with the show. It kind of went, you know, changed locations, various different things. Matt Burns kind of took over, was one of the two folks that kind of took over the show and brought it to Winchester at the time, Winchester, Virginia. And even though the show eventually failed, and the show, I won't say it failed, it wasn't the best. Matt Burns and his partner Mike tried their best to put on the show, but it didn't really succeed. It was the first convention that Matt ever did, and I don't put it back, you know, against him that it didn't truly succeed, but he tried his damnedest for it, and gotta hand it to him. He, you know, for what he did, he put on a great show, even though, again, it wasn't really a success. So, that being said, during this time, because when I initially saw about Four State SlasherCon, it was in maybe March, if not April, of 2015. And between then and when Four State SlasherCon actually occurred, which was in, I think, late October, maybe early November. We, as a show, came to be. That's right. As a lot of you old-timers who've listening to the show for a very, very long time, since the beginning, know that we kind of started up off unofficially in June of 2015 and officially started up in July 2015. So if you want to go by the official date or official launch, by the time we were, the show, Four State SlasherCon rolled around, we were, let's say, July, August, September, October, we were 3, if not 4 months old at that time, at most 5 months old. So we were relatively new. We had a couple of funds in our pocket at that time, so we kind of sponsored Four State SlasherCon in regards to, you know, what they needed, and we had a blast. We were invited down to kind of cover the event. Heck, I might do, or I should say, I might put out as a retrospective episode, the first official panel we were ever asked to do. And I think it was Matt Burns himself that asked us to do this panel. And one of the things that we asked, you know, in regards to put in for it was a couple of interviews, one of which was that we managed to score while we were there. We put in a list. We didn't really score anybody on that list, but we did get like folks like Benjamin from Nightmare Sonata, and we got we met Genevieve Rossi there. We met a few other folks. So, in regards to everything, so it was a wonderful thing. We got to cut our teeth at least start to cut our teeth in regards to us as a show at Four State SlasherCon. So because of this, I want to share with you the interview we did with Benjamin Sani. I'm butchering his name. You'll hear how he pronounces it in the show. The interview. He is, I want to say, the front man for Nightmare Sonata, but he totes himself as the lead vocals and guitar for the band, so therefore, I'm going to say he's the front man for the band. And one of the things I did, because I'm not really knowledgeable in the music scene and the ins and outs of the music scene, I let my co-host Big Candy kind of take the lead in the interview. That way, because he knows more about the music scene, he knows what to ask, where to lead a lot of the questions. Lead a lot of the questions, and I did a lot of the follow-ups in regards to some of the questions, and that way we tag team. And one of the things in note in regards to this is that after their interview, Benjamin kind of approached us and said that we surprised him in regards to how we came off, how professional we came off. And me and Big Candy at the time kind of said that, yeah, this was a great compliment for us as a podcast, because a lot of folks, we kind of thought that a lot of folks in our position that were brand new, and a lot of indie podcasters out there that do this sort of thing might ask, do you like chicken type of questions, that really softball, they like what kind of like it's just fluff and filler, and they don't really ask a lot of hard-hitting questions. They don't go into hard-hitting topics, and when they do discuss things, they don't sound knowledgeable or anything like that. That's why I kind of utilized Big Candy, and his expertise in the music geekiness of things came in handy. So therefore, he was able, you know, to toss a lot of the hardcore questions and the tougher questions. I'm not saying, even though I might say even we were new at this and everything else, we might have softballed a lot of things, but to him, it wasn't, do you like chicken? It wasn't the easy questions or anything like that. It was stuff that he knows about and made him think. So he complimented us that how well we did and how well we came off, and how we, even though we were brand new to not just the convention scene, but how well we came off as podcasters in regards to our knowledge and expertise, meaning in some way, even though we were about 4 to 5 months old, we came off as we were doing this for several months, not just several months, for several years. So also I wanted to share how green I was in regards to the show. We did everything with the one mic that I'm currently using right now, and that was kind of the ugliness of it all. I didn't realize I could use my smartphone at the time, or if I had a smartphone. I don't even remember if I had a smartphone back in 2015, but I didn't think of using my smartphone back then to do the interviews, to get better interviews. I didn't think of, at that time I had a digital recorder that I got from Radio Shack on the cheap. I didn't think of even using that, and I had the thing with me. So I didn't even think of all that. I just set up the computer and was doing it back and forth like that. So I do apologize how ugly this episode will seem and how it came off as kind of very well-rounded, how greenhorn I recorded this thing as compared to now and how I deal with conventions now and what to do. So even though there are sometimes at convention, some conventions when I go the one man, one microphone route, it comes off very harsh. But there are times in regards to, but if you listen to a lot of the retrospectives in regards to their earliness and some of the stuff that we've done in later years, how we've changed and how the show's changed over the years. And that's one of the things I wanted to show you guys in a way, or have you guys listen, how far we've come over the years and how far we've changed. And with a lot of these cons that have been either canceled for 2020 and won't be back until 2021, it's a way of us sharing the con experience with all of you and reliving it and everything else, and it's allowing me to get back in the podcasting game and kind of heal for the moment in regards to everything. And speaking of that, remember folks, I do still have my GoFundMe campaign up and running if you want to help me keep the lights on, not just for the show, but in actuality, because I am still healing, even though I'm putting in paperwork. I don't know if I qualify for anything, but still, it'll help you. Help me keep the lights on. The link will be in the description. All I'm asking, if you cannot donate, to share the post, link post on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ The Long Coat Mafia Podcast. Links are in the show description, including our GoFundMe link. So if you can donate and want to donate and help out, you're more than welcome to. So I'm going to step back right now. I'm going to stop ranting. And I'll see you all on the other side, because here is that 40-some-odd minute interview/episode we did from 4-State SlasherCon back in 2015. And my God, is it kind of good yet ugly? So, here it is. Hey Goombas, welcome to the show, and I'm your host, the Rev Godfather. Helping me out for this interview at 4-State SlasherCon is Big Candy. And with me is
Benjamin Samity, vocals and guitars for Nightmare Sonata.
And you're one of the musical guests here at 4-State SlasherCon, and you'll be performing tonight as well?
Yes.
What kind of music do you normally, for the sake of our fans and listeners?
I guess, like, most simply put, I'm part of the horror rock genre. At the most surface mainstream, you know, things like Rob Zombie, Marilyn Manson, then, you know, also things like Wednesday 13, which is, you know, still a little more mainstream, and then, you know, a lot of people have heard of the Misfits, and, you know, so bands like this, you know. Horror rock is not, it's not necessarily specific to the music style, but more the content, the subject matter, and, like, the imagery. So it's like, you know, Rob Zombie is more metal-based and uses a lot of sampling in his music, you know, whereas... you know, someone like the original Misfits, It was more punk rock, more raw, guitar, bass, drums, vocals, and Danzig, you know, has that very baritone style of singing. So it, as a genre, it's very diverse. You know, it's just so people ask me a lot, like, what kind of music do you play? And there isn't a simple answer. So I'll kind of get wise ass response. Like, we started saying, like, I play fucking Southern voodoo death punk. And I've kind of meant it as a joke, but people are like, yeah, man, that's Southern voodoo death punk. So we're actually going to start putting on the back of a t-shirt,
right?
Because everybody thinks that sounds cool. But I think we may be the world's only Southern voodoo death punk band, but horror rock. I'm part of the horror rock genre.
So it is, forgive me being a little bit naive, is bands like Gwar and Lord part of that, or are they considered separate? Or are they like performance?
I think that it's like, you peripherally they are a part of it. The neat thing about Gwar, and I had opportunity to hang out with a lot of those guys and share space with them. I got to open for Mens Rea, which was Corey Smoot's other band before he passed away. And I got to hang out with Dave Rocky a few times before he passed. But they, the cool thing about Gwar was that they kind of created their own mythos.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so instead of singing yet another song about the Night of the Living Dead, Gwar was a self-contained thing. They started out as like Dave Rocky's band Dead Piggy, and the guy Hunter, who used to play Techno Destructo, they met through the University of Virginia. He wanted to make a movie called The Scumdogs of the Universe, which would feature a fictional band called Gwar. Well, as they were preparing to do this, Death Piggy kind of evolved into Gwar as we know it. And even though they did put out the VHS tapes that were like the straight to VHS B movie horror, which were all really cool, cool. Gwar became more of a musical force than a movie film force.
Right.
Lordy,
So I was pronouncing it right.
Yeah,
it was like, I've been hearing Lord and I've been hearing Lordy. So it's like, all right, which is it? So I guess both are right.
Yeah, they both are right. Though aesthetically, they kind of look similar to Gwar. If, like, you look at them, kind of catch them out of your peripheral. What they talk about is completely different. They really integrate a lot of the Evil Dead type imagery, Army of Darkness kind of imagery. So, like, they actually have a song called Deadite Girls Gone Wild.
Yeah.
And so, like, their video for The Devil is a Loser actually, like, has the Necronomicon or something that looks a lot like it featured prominently in it. So, sure, I think that, it could be said, they are kind of peripherally a part of that. Though not the same way that a band like Blitzkid or Caligrease is horror punk.
Right.
And like my band, Nightmare Sonata, we did not start out trying to be this. We just kind of evolved into it. And the way that that kind of happened was that, that me and the guy that originally founded the group, Nightmare Sonata was supposed to be like this kind of in between place of Typo Negative on the left, Bella Morte, which is a death rock goth band from Charlottesville, Virginia, on the right, by way of Alien 6 Feet. and that's what it was. That was the original idea.
Right.
When we did the first show, it was on Halloween 2004. I was booked by this coven of living vampires and vampire masqueraders to play this house party.
Right.
And so I did the party, and I did it for the first time performing as the Benjamin Samedi character that you see sitting here right now with the top hat and the skull paint and the skulls and the spikes and, the big muscles and stuff. And people thought that looked so cool that they were like, you should always do that. You should always do it just like that.
Right.
Because, like, the skull paint does a lot to kind of bring out, I guess, the emotions that kind of pass across my face when I play.
Right.
And so that's how I got kind of going down that road. And me being the primary songwriter and kind of starting to want to write things more like in character, and developing like a Benjamin Samedy character and storyline, that's how Nightmare Sonata became what we are. You know, it was, and you know, just because it's, I come from more of a punk rock, you know, metal type background, as being the only songwriter and the all the other members of the band kind of coming and going, a lot of like the goth stuff, like as I understand goth to be, right. Sisters of Mercy, Got Lost, and all this, kind of went away and trickled off, and what was left was more of that.
Yeah.
What we're calling Southern Voodoo Death Punk.
Just for the sake, you might be hearing some odd screams and sound effects. So we're right next to the theater room at Forest State. it's not against anything against our guest at all.
Just so, atmosphere.
Atmosphere, yes. Yeah.
It's the soundtrack of my life.
Well, we won't ask questions here.
I plead the fifth.
How'd you get? Was 2004 when you got started in music? What was your main interest in getting into music in the first place?
You know, I was a 15-year-old kid, or younger than that even. I was maybe 12, 13 years old, and I was at a skate rink, which is a big thing in the South. And this song called "Basket Case" by this band called Green Day came on, and it was like the coolest thing I'd ever heard. And then, like, because this is the way they play the guitar and the energy of the song. And then I saw the video for that. And I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. I want to do that. I want to do that. I want to make cool CDs and the people listen to and play guitar in front of people and have music videos. And, like, when I was, I loved buying a CD and opening up the booklet.
Oh, yeah.
And examining the artwork and the lyrics, and I pick up like little facts. Like, I'll bet neither one of you know that Rob Covello has produced every Green Day album since they've been on Reprise Records.
Yeah.
I know that because I would like read the freaking liner notes, you know?
Yeah.
Or that, like, Green Day is on ASCAP as opposed to BMI.
Yeah.
I'm on ASCAP as opposed to BMI. Probably because of that, you know? So, but I thought it was just the coolest thing, and I loved looking at stuff like this, the hysteria that Kiss in their prime could cause.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is fucking awesome. I want to do that too. Like, you know, Ozzy Osbourne in his prime, No More Tears era Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah.
You know, it was probably like when he was at his absolute best.
Yeah.
And you know, just watching how crowds and stuff reacted to that.
Mm.
I thought was I wanted to be a part of that. I wanted to cause that to happen. And so, you know, I've never done anything quite on that scale or even close to it, really. But popping a crowd, you know, when you first walk out or you first hit those notes and you see an audience of, I don't care if it's 15 people or 500, and you see them go off and you see people mouthing your lyrics back at you. And you see, you even when you had a bad show, and you know you didn't have any fun, and it feels like you lost money, and no one was there. When that one person comes up and says that was the coolest thing I've ever seen, you guys are the greatest band I've ever seen, and they hand you that $5 for that CD, it reminds you why it is that you do this, and you know what it is that, you know, there's nothing like that endorphin rush when you have those little moments that occur when you're playing your music and these kind of things happen.
Like, you know? Just did for that person what they, you know, those bands did for you. So
very much, you know, they, and it's like you kind of recreate that same feeling that you had at 13 years old hearing Basket Case in the skate rink. When that, except now it's that person handing you the money for the CD,
right? It's real.
And asking you about like the lyrics to your songs or. You know, I notice, you know, this thing that you do or you say, where did that come from, or whatever it is. It's can't beat it. Nothing, yeah. You know, nothing comes even close.
Right.
Except for maybe six.
So, like, when you put out your seat, do you put a lot of things in the liner notes that help somebody kind of go to the next thing, you know, or help them along?
Well, with the way that CDs come out now,
yeah.
Not like it used to.
Right.
It's like we tend to just have a couple of panels.
Right.
Where we really invest in that, into the background imagery,
right.
Is in our music videos,
okay.
And, you know, our web presence. And, you know, I have all the lyrics to all the songs that are currently available for sale. You can go and on our Reverb Nation page, mm-hmm. Click on the song, and you'll see a little link that says lyrics.
Oh, okay.
I personally type those lyrics in there,
okay.
You know, so that people can ask me about them.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll get requests from really weird places. There was, I don't know who this person is, but they, in the Bloodbath music video, they said, I love this song, I've seen this band like 3 times, I'd like to know the lyrics to the song.
Right.
And so I emailed that person through YouTube the lyrics to the song.
There you go.
You know, so, you know, I make it available that way, making sure that, you know, as much content as our audience or prospective audience could possibly want in terms of stuff like this podcast.
Right.
Or, you know, any little fanzine. I don't care. Whatever you want.
Just being accessible.
Accessible. And, you know, that was one of the cool, discovering you, man, when I first got into the Misfits was, you know, all getting into all of that stuff. And the fact that they had it. You know,
a theme club.
The fact that they had it available the way that they did.
Right.
You know, Type O Negative was really good about that.
Yeah.
You know, when they were going. Yeah. And so it's like I kind of want to make sure that, like, I love that stuff.
Yeah.
So I make sure that if, you know, whatever it is that I put out, the product that I put out, I make sure it's something I would want to buy for me.
Definitely.
And generally when I do things that way, that's the stuff that sells. That's the stuff that people think is cool.
Right.
Is when I make sure it's something that I would want for myself.
Right, it's not cookie cutter. It's
no,
yeah.
It's all very personal to me.
Awesome.
You know.
Yeah.
So, I know with some bands that when they go into a new area, a new market, whatever you wish to call it, it shocks them that they, because of outlets such as YouTube or websites, it kind of, even though they're playing it for the first time, they're kind of shocked that how is this band, you know, how did this audience know the lyrics so far?
Yeah.
Has that happened to you, or is that?
It has. It's all, you know, it more and more often, like I say, over the last couple of years, you know, it's, you know, being instantly recognized at a convention, you know, especially when you weren't even necessarily supposed to be there, you know, is like really cool.
Yeah.
But when people come up to me and be like, yeah, I've seen you however many times, you got to understand that for the first, I'd say, 4 or 5 years, easily, like, it was a very, like, close circle of people that were repeat offenders at our concerts. You know, so when all of a sudden people that I have no idea who the hell they are like, this is like the fourth time I've seen you. Yeah, where have you seen me? Oh, I saw you in South Boston. I've seen you in Charlotte. I saw you in like 2 different states, 3-4 different towns. Wow. Want a autograph or something? That's really
right?
Neat. You know what? Here's a button. Take a button.
Yeah,
dude.
Right?
You know, you're like, take my stuff. You know, you don't have to pay for it. This is for being cool.
This
you
is
know?
For just showing up.
You know, that, like, yeah, that, yeah. It's, it, like, I don't know that will ever become commonplace to
yeah.
me. You know, it's like, some of these assholes that like people go out of their way to come see them play, they go see their music, and then you realize that when you're on my side of the fence,
yeah.
that wow, these guys are dickheads. They're like these self-entitled prima donnas. They kind of have no appreciation for anything.
Yeah,
and it's like I sit there and I look at my bandmates, I'll look at our manager, and I'll say, you know, if that guy, whoever it is, you know, had the same work ethic that we did,
yeah.
and the same fan appreciation that we did, with the networking
yeah.
that he or she already has, they'd be selling out Coliseums.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and it, you know, so I can tell you that, like, no matter how big Nightmare Sonata does or does not get, I will always treat the fans with the utmost respect.
That's amazing. That's
because awesome. when you hand me $5 for a CD, it's $5 in my gas tank.
Right.
That's a pack of strings for my guitar.
Yeah.
That is a happy meal for my kid. You know, I will always treat our fans with the utmost respect. I will always be available to them as much as I possibly can be through, like, the social media outlets. My Facebook page really is my Facebook page.
That's cool.
You know, and when I send fangirls pictures of my dick, it really is. it's whatever. don't judge me.
No.
But, you know, I'll always have that appreciation, that respect for them. And, you know, when I deal with promoters, venue people, it's like, we're always going to be on time.
Yeah.
You know, we're always going to be respectful to the staff. We're always going to be easy to work with. I don't need a room in La Quinta. Motel 6 is fine.
Right.
Okay? And the fact that you bought me a room at all and you made me sleep on somebody's floor, man, I love you. You know, I don't need, you know, you don't have to get me, you know, Perrier water, bottles of water. You know what? Store brand from Food Lion,
right,
or whatever it is that you have, wherever it is that you're from. Just get us that.
Right.
You know, we're never going to take advantage of people that way.
Right.
We're going to keep it economic. We're going to be as respectful as we possibly can. You know, because if you're an asshole, eventually people are going to find out.
Right.
And they're not going to want to spend money on the product.
It's going to keep. It's going to hold you back.
And all the shit talking that I do is behind the microphone as a part of the show.
Right.
And, you know, people, like, are always amazed. Like, I'm talking to me after the fact that I'm like, hey, how's it going? Really glad you're here. You know, as I'm like, ah, fuck you. Show me your tits or die. Show me your tits and die. You know, I guess that's what they expect. You know, like, when I'm actually probably a really boring person, comparatively speaking, in real life, you know.
Right.
They're like, hey, well, what do you want to do today? You know, we need to take you to the strip club, or whatever, you know, whatever it is that they think that rock stars want. So I'm like, you know, really, if you could get me, like, a day pass at, like, Gold's Gym or something, I think I'd rather have that.
Right.
But you know what? You want to come lift weights with me? Why don't you come lift weights with me? Whoever it is, I'm,
yeah.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, just, you don't know how to lift weights, I'll teach you. Let's go. You know, it's all just being cool to people is really, I mean, it's like,
yeah.
You want a beer? No, I don't.
No.
I'd rather have a Coke Zero. You know, it's like, I don't need that. You know, just water's fine. Thank you.
Yeah.
Power bar.
My wife and I, we used to open our home to touring, like, hardcore bands, like, when they come through Winchester or we're on their way somewhere or whatever. And a lot of times, they just wanted to sit around the house, eat pizza, play video games. I was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
Until then we had our kid, then we don't do it anymore. But yeah, back in the day, yeah. They just, you would think, like, she had a lot of misconceptions because she didn't grow up going to shows and stuff like that.
Right.
She grew up, you know, with the kind of the perspective of the fan going, oh my gosh, these people are on the pedestal.
Right.
So,
limos.
So she thought, well, do we need to pay them?
Five-star hotels, $1,000 night hookers.
I said, no, watch this, honey. I'm just going to give them a couch for the night. Watch how happy they get.
Yeah, it's just like, that's how you save them. I mean, because otherwise, you know, bands like us would be sleeping in the van at a rest stop.
Yeah.
You know, posting guard every 2 hours. You know, sleeping on shift to make sure no one tries to rip us off while we're sleeping, you know. So, yeah, I totally, yeah, it's... Yeah, I mean, there are bands out there that, you know, you got to be careful about. You know, there's a band whose name I won't say, but that I've worked with them in the recent past where, you know, we promoted them. We were the ones that brought them in. We opened for them in one town, and then we booked for them and did the whole promotion in the next town. And to help them kind of bridge that gap, because they were getting ready to go from North Carolina all the way up to New York. And, you know, we rolled out the red carpet, man. I mean, we had, like, pounds of bacon, and, like, we were going to do eggs, and, like, coffee, and hash browns. Like, we had breakfast planned, you know, like, my old lady had, like, racks of ribs and chicken quarters and homemade macaroni and cheese. Rolled out the red carpet. I mean, not, they not only did they have the couch, but they also had like mattresses we put down in the basement. They were going to have all this stuff. And what they asked us for instead was pain pills. They wanted drugs. So, well, we got you all this stuff. They're like, we only need drugs when we're on tour. And we were not willing to supply that because, I mean, it's like, I don't care who knows. I'm straight edge. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs of any kind. Right. I don't gamble. You know, like I said, I'm a pretty boring person. You know, it's like weird sexual stuff, you know, I don't indulge in, like, chemicals or substances. Right. You know, it's like, you know, I'd rather lift weights and jack off on somebody's tits, thank you. rather than get, you know, shoot up heroin or whatever.
Right,
You know, but when we told, like, you know, we've got Motrin, you want Motrin? we only get drugs on tour. They ended up staying in a motel. Instead,
right.
Did not do breakfast. Like, we had two full meals prepared, ready to do for him.
Right.
Pretty much just, like, refused any kind of kindness. And then, you know, got really pissy and petulant at the gig.
Huh.
Because, you know, we're not into that scene. We do not know who to hook you up with to get you that stuff.
Right.
And, you know, they played the show. I mean, they did a great job with the show, but, you know, it's like they don't really want to work with us anymore, and we're not sure we really want to work with them anymore.
Yeah.
You know, as an organization, you know, there are individuals right. within their camp that are decent. But because, you know, they were your wife's... what her perception? They were her perception.
They were the rock stars.
And
do you think they do that because that's what they think that they need to do, or do you think that they do that because that's just really how they are?
That's a lot of speculation. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that some of them feel entitled to act that way,
right?
And I know that Peter Steele type of negative.
Right.
We're buddies with the publisher of his biography, both the writer and the publisher actually from Greensboro, where we're from.
Okay.
And, you know, Peter he kind of felt trapped in the persona.
Yeah.
You know, and for him what that meant was that, you know, he was in Playgirl. Mm-hmm. And so women would just be like waiting at his doorstep. And whether he liked this person or what, he kind of felt obligated to have some kind of sexual encounter with him.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it was because he felt he didn't want to disappoint the fan.
And
most people hear that and be like, well, I don't see what the fucking problem is. Like, no, like if you're not into somebody, and you know, or you're like Pete. Couldn't really have normal relationships because of that. You begin to feel trapped by that.
Or is it because of the scenario, or is getting not so much the music or anything, but the lifestyle is getting old?
And the lifestyle was getting old for him, and like the persona because of who people perceived Peter Steele to be.
Yeah.
It was something he felt trapped by. And it's kind of like, so it's like one of the reasons why I have my stage persona and I perform under a stage name, like I have a character that I play,
right.
is because I'm a really boring person in my real life. It's like, I take this off and you know, if I passed you in the street, you wouldn't know it was me other than the build maybe.
Right.
But I'm probably buried under some layers that would make my shoulders a little harder to see.
Right.
That's why I have to separate. And even then, it's like sometimes I kind of get wrapped up in a little bit. Because people, when they address me through my, like, this persona's Facebook page, they expect to...
talk to you. Yeah, the character.
To talk to the character.
Right.
The person that they see on
stage.
Right. You know, and that's a tremendous amount of energy. You know,
a lot of responsibility,
and you know, there's some responsibility to it too. You know, so It's like, I'll buy you a buyer CD if you'll show me pictures of your dick. Okay? You know? And so it's like, you know, it's like really easy to get, you know,
caught up.
Yeah.
And I kind of built in from like a very early stage in Nightmare Sinan's development a way of escaping that when I wanted to.
Okay.
You know, because I can just not log into that profile if I don't want to, you know, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Speaking of social media, has that helped a band like yourself and other independents that might be out there reach out to newer audience that, meaning a band in, let's say, Seattle, is now able to reach a band in Florida, not another band, but audiences from Florida or New York, easier than it was, like, earlier, before?
It is a double-edged sword. On one hand, it's really easy to access all this stuff. It is really easy to find new music. And with things like Pandora, the Music Genome product, you know, or project, Music Genome Project, which we're on. You can like us on Pandora. You know, where if you like this artist, then you may also like this artist. You know, right. Things like this. It is easier for fans to make those new discoveries. On the other hand, and this has been a reoccurring thing with people talking to me throughout the course of the convention in these last 2 days, it's like, They're so bombarded and oversaturated with, like, there's so much shit out there.
Yeah.
And that it's like, in the old days, it was special to have a band that had a CD out because not everybody could do that.
Right.
Now it's easy.
Right.
It's easy. And so I think that people are more reluctant to try new things. Sight unseen or whatever.
Right.
Because there's so much of it. And it's like everybody and their brother's in a band. And it's like, I'm in a band. Yeah, I don't have ears. You know? I don't listen to music. I don't even have ears. I'm deaf.
I'm deaf.
You know, they don't even want to talk to you because it's like, you know, everybody's trying to get you to go to a show. And,
yeah.
You know, so... It's a double-edged sword, you know. One of the things that we always have talked about is that, you know, the people don't realize how file sharing...
I was going to ask about that.
...piracy has destroyed the independent artists.
Yeah.
And back in the day, when Napster was a thing, Lars Ulrich was the person that championed the rights of the musician.
Right.
Wrong choice.
Yeah.
For a poster boy. Because he's a Metallica. And what people see is that, well, Metallica is this huge band. I mean, how is this going to really hurt you?
Yeah.
You're millionaires.
Well, they also made their name on people recording their live show. And tape trading. Which was essentially Napster before Napster.
but the tape trading was different.
It was different.
It was different. Because eventually you'd go out and buy the record. Right. You buy the actual thing because it's right. Dubbed. Cassette tapes sound like ass. but what I've explained to people before is that if you download from you pirate something from a band like Metallica, mm-hmm. or someone like Madonna, you know, or Rush or whoever, where their record sales come from. Is that the different vendors, Walmart, Target, Best Buy, but they buy lots of that record, 100,000 in this lot, you know. And so, like, when you hear, like, well, this album went triple platinum or whatever it was, it's based on those sales. So Metallica and their label now has that money. They've got it, and they are not giving it back.
Right.
The burden is now on the vendor to push the units.
Right.
So the labels do not start to feel the pinch of illegal piracy, which I guess is like not a double negative. What's the opposite of double negative? It's a redundancy.
Yeah, redundancy.
Illegal piracy. Yeah. They don't feel the pinch of it until year, two, 3 years down the road, when the vendor's less willing to buy as many units because it was harder for them to sell off the last lot. The people that it hurts the most are people like me. No one's buying my music in lots. Alright? When you buy my music, unless you got it through iTunes or something like that, something through my digital distributor, if you have a physical CD in your hand, it means you bought it for me at a show, or you came to a convention to get it, or you ordered it directly from us online. I found out years ago, after Necrophile had been out for a year, that Necrophile had been illegally downloaded over 500 times in Eastern Europe. The first run of the deluxe digital packaging with the extra art panels. It was like a little miniature album, you know. We only did a run of 100 of them. So it was illegally pirated more when the original run sold. To kind of put it in perspective, if all 500 of those people had paid $10 for the deluxe packaging, which came with a free sticker, 500 times 10, that's what, 5,000?
Yeah.
I could have put out the next record with the first run of 100 and taken my band on a short tour and not had to worry about whether or not, you know, we made production for the shows because it was already paid for.
Exactly.
And we'd just be having fun.
Right.
And probably still have money left over to take my bandmates out for a nice steak dinner.
Right.
You know, you know, when you put it in that perspective, you know, well, no one's going to know the difference. Yeah, actually, eventually we do feel that.
Yeah.
Every $5 that's stolen, that's a pack of strings that I don't have.
Right.
You know, so these assholes that say music should be free. It ain't free.
No.
Someone's paying for it. Someone's footing the bill. Be it the companies that sell you the instruments, or be it the companies that you bought the recording equipment from, or be it the people that own the servers that it's being downloaded from. Someone is making money off this. The cost is getting shifted from the fan to somebody else. But what's going to happen is that eventually you're going to starve out your artists.
Right.
No one's going to be fucking willing to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Because, you know, other than for the sheer love of it, because you're going to go in the hole doing it. And music's going to go further underground. So people in California may never hear of a band like Nightmare Sonata because we only play basement shows in like the Triad of North Carolina.
Right.
Because that's the only, you know, because that's all there is. And, you know, music will suffer as a result.
So in essence, from your perspective, the music industry, due to piracy and the digital age, could in essence become full circle, whereas before the internet, not many people might have known of your band, but now with the digital age, everybody knows about it, but due to piracy, it might go back to the way it was.
You know, it's hard to say. Kind of the conclusion that all of us have kind of come to is that the industry, record industry, as we know it, needs to just die so that it can be reborn. So that all the old heads that are trying to keep it the way that it is,
the business model,
they will die off, and someone that's young and fresh and has a modern perspective will figure out how to revive it and make it viable again.
Right.
You know, and you know, it's very interesting because I was listening to one of the panels yesterday, and one of the panels was talking about was, like, the trend, the business side of horror movies. Where is all the money going? Why are we seeing so many remakes? Why all this and why that? It's interesting. Horror as a genre, because of the digital age and illegal piracy and all of this, has had a lot of the same problems that the music industry has. You know, so they were saying that, like, you know, in the 80s, a $30 million budget for a horror movie nothing.
Right.
And nowadays, a $1 million budget for a horror movie is a lot.
Right, that's what we were hearing earlier.
Yeah, from Rebecca.
Yeah, that was because she did another talk today.
Yeah.
She spoke yesterday on a lot of the same subjects. So she and I kind of, you know, were able to exchange some ideas there and kind of realize, like, wow, it's not just me. It's everybody that's doing anything that's independent, anything that's not the mainstream.
Right.
You know, it is kind of suffering from it.
So with the strain on the industry, like, do you think the goal of musicians is still to get to that level of, like, the Kisses and the, you know, Rushes of the world, or are you fine just being where you're at and achieving on your own?
I can only speak for myself.
Right.
And so I imagine there are a lot of people that look at it the same way I do. In terms of notoriety, mm-hmm. I want to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame someday.
Right.
Is that reasonable or rational? Probably not. It's probably an extremely lofty goal. But if the Sex Pistols did it, I can do it.
Right.
You know, but on the other side of that, what I really want is to make a dent, is to make an impact so that people remember what I've done.
Right.
And if, you know, I got where I was able to play 500 seaters consistently, you know, like House of Blues type venues, mm-hmm. I don't need to play coliseums and arenas. I don't need to play amphitheaters. It's like I don't believe that if I stay true to my vision of my music that it'll ever get to that level. If it did, it'd be nice. You know, but, you know, I think that getting where I'm consistently playing, like, your House of Blues type venues would be is a more reasonable goal. I think that getting my music to where it makes a reliable part-time income for my bandmates, you know, because my bandmates are the ones that are really struggling, I feel like, and I feel like they're getting to where, like, just they know that they're going to make a little bit of money anytime they come out to play. You know, that's our goal. We realize that it's actually better to do it. It's if you can make it doing it on your own without getting involved in label, it's better. Because the label, you know, at least with, like, a lot of the 360 scams that are out there, the label rapes bands.
Yeah.
You know, the band essentially becomes these indentured servants. And... in the process of that, it's like the label owns all of the imagery, the label owns all the master tracks. So your only hope is that by the time you get to the end of your contract that you've broken even, you're not in the red with the label. So that you can negotiate, you've attained enough notoriety that you can negotiate a better contract with someone else.
Right.
You know, hopefully, maybe. But all the work that you put into getting up there, you don't own any of that.
Wow.
That label owns all of that. So if you go on to bigger and greater things, they're still benefiting from your hide. It's not really yours. And you can't go back and sue for the rights.
No.
You know, so we don't want, you know, you buy from us. Like, I own all of that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I don't have to share that with any record label or anything like this. I'm just recouping my own expenses and losses, you know, and it's better that way. So when you buy one CD from me, I get as much money from that one $5 CD as I would get if I sold 250 CDs signed to a label.
Yeah.
Because of the way that the breakdown of the money works. The same thing with t-shirts or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it's better that we do it the way we do.
So I'm going to end the show right now. If any of the listeners have any questions or feel that they disagree with our guest, feel free to email us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com. We'll be happy to say you're freaking wrong.
Damn right.
So it's a well pleasure to have you on the show. When this episode drops, we'll send you a link. I think we have... I'll get another business card off you just in case.
Okay.
Once the episode drops, we'll send you a link to the episode and let you know where to find it.
All of our fans get exposed to it.
So we hope you enjoy your remaining time at 4 State. So, and again, we thank Matt and Mike for having us
here at the show too. Awesome. So, thank you so much, guys.
Welcome back, everybody. For those of you who've been listening to the show since roughly the beginning, I hope you enjoyed walking down memory lane by listening to this cringeworthy sounding interview. And for those of you who are listening for the first time to the Long Coat Mafia podcast, I hope you enjoyed going down memory lane with this cringeworthy sounding interview. Just to let the new folks who are listening know, this and those who might not remember, what you heard was not just the interview with Benjamin from Nightmare Sonata. It was pretty much the whole episode. That was the whole episode. The only thing I cut out was our intro music sort of thing that we had at the time. But that was the entire episode. Literally, the entire episode. There was no intro. There was pretty much no outro music. I just ended it. There was no, hey, find us on iTunes and all that. But I digress. If you all have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, you can always send them to us via email, which is longcoatmafia@gmail.com. Or you could put them as a comment on the pin post on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. And while you're there, hit that like button so you can follow us for whenever we do updates to our page, which I have to get back into once I get back at the house. But still, I digress. That's why we have the GoFundMe page up right now. So it helps me pay the bills and get help, try to get me back on track one way or another. Now, to also contact us, if you so wish, you can do so via Twitter. I should put more stuff on Twitter right now, but again, I digress. You can still contact us on Twitter by DMing us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is Long Coat Mafia. And by the way, speaking of our Facebook page, as we did earlier, you can also send us a message if you so wish by clicking that message button, which should be right near the like button, which you should be hitting as well while you're on our Facebook page, which again is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. And speaking of Facebook owned stuff, we are all also on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is Long Coat Mafia, and while you're there, hit that follow button, as well as for those of you on Twitter, hit that follow button so you can figure out, see us post stuff every once in a while when we are able to. So especially if we are quote unquote kidnapped for that con later this month, and we'll be posting stuff of like cosplayers, people at the booths, and everything else. So you're going to want to follow us on Instagram in regards to that. As well as if we don't post all the photos on Instagram, we'll post even more photos on our Facebook page, which again is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. So make sure you hit that follow button and that like button. And speaking of putting stuff on our social media, we also have a YouTube channel. And the thing is, because we don't have the subscriber count to have our own dedicated name in the URL. So you're going to have to go to YouTube and search. And I do mean search for The Long Coat Mafia Podcast. You have to put in The Long Coat Mafia Podcast in that search field, or else you'll get a lot of mean stuff come up and the wrong stuff. But if you put in The Long Coat Mafia Podcast in that search bar, our channel does come up. And when it does, hit that subscribe button and hit search our channel for all the cool stuff that we did put up over the years, because you want to check out the walkthroughs, the music videos we've done, and everything else. We've been around for 5 years, we have pretty much 5 years of content up there. Older episodes, walkthroughs, music videos, heck, we might have an interview up there too. So check it out, see what we have up there. We have a couple of live streams that we did in regards to gameplay. As soon as we get back on track with our internet, we'll hopefully get back on track of doing live streaming again. Speaking of live streaming, We don't have Mixer anymore because, well, Xbox and Microsoft decided no more Mixer. So we do have the option of, on our Xbox, streaming through Twitch and through our PS4 streaming through YouTube. So we'll let you all know once we get our internet back. That's number one. Number two, when we are streaming via our consoles. But if you're hearing this episode, the reason why we're able to post these episodes without internet at our safe house is because we go to public Wi-Fi at places, stuff like the library or a McDonald's or Wendy's or a place that has open Wi-Fi that we could sit down, have a diet soda, because we now are part of the type 2 diabetes family and we can't really have stuff with a whole mess of sugar. So diet soda is the best thing we can kind of have at the moment. Again, all the links to our social media are in the show description, as well as spelling of Benjamin's last name and hopefully a URL if Nightmare Sonata is still an active band all these years later. So either way, links will be in the show description, and as always, our link to our GoFundMe will be in the pinned post on our Facebook page. If you will, I do again ask you to share that post every chance you get, to get not just this show shared out to everybody, but that GoFundMe link shared out to everybody as well. Also, if you're listening to this on if you're listening to this on a mobile device but wish to listen to us on your desktop or laptop computer, you're able to do so by subscribing to us on iTunes, or if you have a Mac computer, whatever they're calling iTunes on that right nowadays, or Spotify, or Stitch Radio, or visiting our website at thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. That's right, the word "the" is included in. It's all one word, in essence, all one word, no spaces or anything like that. It's thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com, and you're able to go all the way back to the beginning of our show from episode 1 to this episode. That's right, over 270 plus episodes, you know, available for you to listen to, despite how many episodes might be on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or what have you. You're able to listen to them all, either on the website or download them to your laptop or desktop computer and listen to them in your player of choice. But if you're listening to on a desktop or laptop computer and wish to listen to our episodes on the go via whatever device you choose, you're able to do so by subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, TuneIn. That's right, we're now on TuneIn, and plus where other podcasts are found. That's right, I think I said Spotify, but I'm not sure. We are on Spotify. Again, links are in the description, if it shows description on our main website as always, which again is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. So check us out, listen to our back episodes, go to our website. And speaking of mobile stuff, before I forget, we are on, because we're a part of Podbean, we're a part of the Podbean app. If you visit our website on your mobile device and want to download the older episodes, like from like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, or even 5 years ago, it's going to ask you for the Podbean app. So, and plus, I ask you to, if you're on desktop or laptop computer, to bookmark our site, just in case Spotify or iTunes/Apple Podcasts gets a little funky, and they, because it tends to, I know, I speak from experience because I'm a podcast listener myself, it tends to get funky with some podcasts, so therefore, guess what? Bookmark our site. That way you're always able to get an episode. Plus, also have the Podbean app just in case things go sideways with your player of choice. That way you have a backup option. And that's it for now. What holds for next week? I don't know. Could be reviews. Could be another retro episode. So stay tuned to see what happens. And I am out.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.